11.
Now back to John Laws. Have your say on the issues of the day. 1143 2HD.
Life's not so tough when there's Lawsy. He's good news to me. He can take a problem and turn the problem into opportunity. He plays my kind of music and always has a special tune for me. He talks my kind of language and sometimes he'll even croon for me. He's the voice of Australia you can trust. He keeps you going when the going gets tough. I've got Lawsy talking to me. Lawsy talking to me. He's a fighter, he's a skiter. Sentimental blighter. Oh, what a feeling. Oh, what a feeling. When Lawsy talks to me.
Okay, we're into the final hour of the John Laws Morning Show, so give us a call and tell us what is on your mind. You know the number, 1-300-564-652. A lot of people, I think, join the armed forces with a desire to serve their country and also a desire to see the world, and you can't blame them for that. But many of them, not probably as many as we would like, are fortunate enough to establish a pretty illustrious career, which sees them not only become the Chief of the Defence Force, but also transition into one of our most important public figures. One man who did achieve great things after serving in the Vietnam War, including running disaster relief efforts and being appointed as Governor General, is Sir Peter Cosgrove. He's just published a new memoir, which is called You Shouldn't Have Joined. I'm going to ask him about that because he's in the studio and I can ask him. Sir Peter and his wife, Lady Cosgrove, join me. Welcome to the program and thank you very much for giving us some of your time.
It's good to be on your program again, John. It's good to see you.
It's very good to see you. You well and happy?
Yes, sir. Bright-eyed and bushy-tailed.
Lady Cosgrove, does the same apply to you?
Absolutely.
Well and happy. Okay, that's good. Could you explain? I'm looking at the book. The book looks great. I really do want you to sign it for me because I will treasure it. But the little writing at the top, you shouldn't have joined it. You shouldn't have joined. That is the title of the book.
Yes, it's an eye-catcher, but it's not the full statement. It's the first part of this statement. And let's imagine, John, that there's a great group of soldiers and they've just been given a job that they don't like, you know, maybe sweeping the barracks or something like that. And they're all looking a little bit down in the mouth. A sergeant major typically would stand in front of them, look them in the eye, and to cheer them up, he'd say, "You shouldn't have joined if you can't take a joke."
Yeah.
It's one of those Australian sort of ironic statements, and that's what I'm trying to reflect there, that this was a joyous journey for me, and I love being in the Army.
Have you loved all your life?
Yes. Yes, thrills and spills, and if you have to avoid the spills and not have the life, I'll take the thrills and the spills. We've just been on the roller coaster and loved every moment of it.
What has been the most exciting time in your life?
I'm going to get Lynn to answer that, please, John, because she's going to say married to me, but I'm not sure.
We've been very fortunate to, for the whole 44 years, we've got three great sons. We've moved house 27 times. But I think obviously the highlight has been the Governor General time. Such a privilege and honour, and we have seen and done some of the most amazing things.
Well, you've headed up, for my money, the most amazing country in the world. I mean, we are so lucky to be Australian. We're so lucky to be in Australia. People talk about the tyranny of distance. I think the tyranny of distance pays off for us. I think we have remained, we've kept our own personality and our own character because we've not been influenced by other countries.
I think we are a very lucky country in so many ways, but I think our national treasure is our people. They are courageous and stoic and optimistic, and they certainly have huge compassion. Let there be a natural disaster, obviously here in Australia, or remember the Asian tsunami where Australians, out of their own pockets, not the government's money, out of their own pockets, subscribed $250 million to go to the people of Indonesia. And this was after we metaphorically had the boxing gloves on for a while.
Yeah, that's right. You did for a while.
Yeah, so yet Australians saw that a big neighbour had desperate need and that we were there. That sort of character typifies Australia. I know that we'll get through all of the coronavirus, all of the economic downturn, and we'll emerge strong. This is a nation that took World War, the Depression and World War II in its stride.
Yep. Why are Australians different?
Well, I think we came from a pioneering base. I think we weren't fettered by a faux aristocracy. People sort of dragged themselves up by their own bootstraps, and that was the foundation of the Australian community. And I think we've only been enriched by the waves of migration. And yes, we've changed a bit as people, but the people who came to us also have absorbed some wonderful and admirable Australian qualities. Compassion and a sense of community. You know, serving others before yourself, I think that's a wonderful characteristic of Australian people.
So do I, and I'm so delighted to hear you say that we're fortunate for the other people who have come to Australia to make Australia their home. They've made a hell of a difference to our lives.
Yeah, absolutely, and they, I remember being... I'm a boy from Paddo, and I remember how disorientated we were when an Italian family moved in next door as new arrivals, and within weeks... we were hopping the fence to each other, eating their new cuisine. We hadn't had much of that Italian-rich cuisine at that stage. And look now, every suburb that wants to call itself cosmopolitan has got three or four different themed restaurants at least.
Yes, at least. No, I think we owe those people a great deal. Why did you decide to write this book? Did you think it was... going to be beneficial to you, or did you think it was going to be beneficial to Australia, or did you think it was just going to be an amusing and entertaining thing to do?
The last two, for sure. What did Wayne Bennett say? I mean, Wayne's got his own argot, but he did say, don't die with the music in you. And I think he was talking about life, you know.
Yeah, it was, yeah.
But to me, I sort of signed off on... a story of my life when I did the first memoir, which was dated to 2006. And I thought, well, that's the end of my public life. And then, wow, I went on boards. I lived through some interesting times on the Qantas board. And then I was asked to be Governor General. And I thought, well, at the end of that, I should write about it because I wanted to write. I have fun writing.
Who asked you to be Governor General?
Tony Abbott.
Well, that's interesting.
Yep.
Good choice. One of the very few good choices that Tony made.
You know, when he asked me, John, I was sitting in a car with a board colleague going to some board activity in Queensland. There'd been a bit of a rumour running around that I might be one of the possible people to be Governor-General. My phone rings, I'm sitting in the back of the limo, and on my screen it comes up, Tony Abbott. And I knew that with my board colleague sitting alongside me, that if I said, hello, Prime Minister, the game would be up. So I said, g'day, and left it at that. And the Prime Minister said, oh, is that... Yes, yes. And he said, went ahead, I'd like you to consider being Governor-General. I said, oh, that's very interesting. I'll get back to you. And he must have he must have thought I was the biggest flake that he'd ever spoken to.
Why did you do that?
Because I wanted to talk to Lynn. And I didn't want my pal alongside me in the limo to say, are you going to be the next Governor-General? So I wanted to keep it quiet until I'd spoken to my wife, you know. And I rang back Tony Abbott the next day and said, Prime Minister, Peter...
By the way.
Yeah, by the way, you know, I'll do that. And I explained why I was a bit offhand.
That was the middle of October and the announcement wasn't made till the end of January. So we had to
keep
very tight-lipped.
And we didn't even tell our kids...
Yeah. You didn't?
No, they got just before the announcement.
Ah, that's a good story, terrific story. Well, have you ever been frightened?
Absolutely. You are frightened when you're on combat operations, that's for sure. It's very healthy and natural to be frightened. And all your training is in part designed to help you manage that. And then when things become actual rather than threatened, that you react in the way that saves your life, saves that of your people, and actually defeats the enemy. So, yes, being frightened is par for the course.
Okay. Can you remember one particular incident when you were particularly frightened?
I can recall there was a night when I was in rubber plantation. It was very, very dark.
Was this in New Guinea?
No, this is in Vietnam. So I took some of my boys out because I could see away in the rubber, hundreds of metres away, moving lights. So I thought, that's the enemy. But we were set up for the night. We weren't going to take the whole shebang over there. So I took three of my men with me, and one of them carrying a radio, and we snuck out there, and we thought, we'll creep up on these guys. And we're going along, and just as we were maybe 100 metres away, the lights went out.
Uh-oh.
And I thought, have they heard us? Have they seen us? Have they just moved on? Who are they? We weren't about to shoot. We didn't know who was there. So we stopped, and I thought, I think I'm about to engage in folly here. In the Stygian darkness. We didn't have any of those night vision devices then. So I sat us around a rubber tree. One person facing out in the four directions, radioed my sergeant back with the rest of the platoon, said, we're going to stay here for the night and I'll see you in the morning.
And
I think that was healthy fright.
Yeah. Healthy fright. Yeah. And you sat there all night?
Oh, yeah, it was uncomfortable, but the other alternative was to be at high risk. So I called discretion the better part of valour on that occasion.
Yeah, good idea. What's the matter with Australia?
Well, we've smashed the economy, necessarily, and the thought that young people are being cast out of work with very dodgy prospects for their aspirations to be realised in the short term, that is the preoccupation should be of governments at every level. Creating jobs, yes, let's do it. And we've got brilliant people who will be stronger for this as they advance, you know, the young people, as they get through this. They're going to be a fabulous generation, a little bit cynical, a little bit wounded, but they'll thrive from the experience. You can't tell them that now. So we've got to get them back on their feet and working as soon as possible.
And you think that is possible?
Yes, because Australians have been so wonderfully disciplined during the coronavirus. Now the next phase is the recovery. And we've pretty much done what governments have asked of us. And now they'll be asking of us to do various things to stimulate and grow the economy, which means creating jobs. And it's going to be tough. And, you know, the leisure of holidays here, there and everywhere, well, that may be less possible for people my age, because we'll have to do whatever government wants, in an economic sense, to help that generation get back on their feet.
Yes, is it going to be hard to do that?
Absolutely, it's going to be tough.
Yeah.
Because, you know, at the moment we haven't even opened up every border for commercial activity and just ordinary travel. We can't get you couldn't go for a flight to some of the states of Australia without, you know, at the moment they're still closed and, you know, they should be reopening very soon.
What do you feel about Anastasia Palaszczuk closing Queensland?
I think it'll be open the day before the election.
I think you're right. But you didn't answer the question, Sir Peter.
She's made it plain that she's thinking only of Queenslanders. I'm thinking of our son, our daughter-in-law, our two grandkids up there. We haven't seen them in a while except over Zoom. I'll be in the car and on the way as soon as we're allowed to travel.
Okay, do you think she was right?
Proof of the pudding, she would say yes. And their voters, Queenslanders, will give her their opinion on Saturday.
While I am seeking your opinions on various things, what is your opinion of our Gladys?
I am sad that she's found herself in this predicament.
Me too.
And I know her to be a most engaging and committed person. From my point of view, the feedback I've seen suggests that her constituents, which is all the people of New South Wales, want her to serve on. And, you know, from my point of view, she should serve on.
Yep. I noticed Lady Cosgrove is nodding her head in agreement. So you feel, do you, as a woman, do you feel sympathy for Gladys Berejiklian?
I do, very much so, John. I think she's done an amazing job as Premier and made more things happen than anybody has for a long time. I think she's been fantastic over the coronavirus.
Yes.
And I wish her well into the future.
Yep. Well, I do too, and I'm sure we all do. I think she's an extremely decent woman. From any dealing I've had with her, I found her very pleasant. Mm. And so she maybe fell in love with the wrong bloke, but you know, it does happen, doesn't it?
We are human beings, and we're fundamentally flawed, and every bloke is flawed more than most women.
Well, now, hang on.
Except you and I, John, of course.
Okay, the book's available in better bookshops, and I suppose if you want to go to Amazon or Bookpedia or whatever it's called, do that. But if you've got a bookshop near you, for goodness sake, go to the bookshop. Go to your local bookstore. We've got to keep these little bookstores surviving. Everybody just goes to Amazon, you get the thing the next day, but that, don't be in a hurry. Wander down to your local bookstore and have a yarn to the man or the woman who's probably all by themselves in the bookstore and have a talk about this book, Gerald Sir Peter Cosgrove's book, and any other book that might be there. We've got to support, whatever we do, we've got to support our bookshops. I mean, Booktopia, Bookopedia, that's okay. But if you've got a bookshop, for goodness sake, use it. Do you agree, Sir Peter?
I absolutely do. And we've got a local bookshop in our suburb that we go to coffee shops and the like. And the lady there is fantastic, and she is a one-person band, one-man band.
Well, there you go.
Band. Yeah, and I would love to see people getting books in that manner. So long as they get books, my book's on sale, but at such times you can disappear into a book if it's interesting.
You bet.
And I think that's a wonderful thing.
I love reading, just love it.
Yeah.
And I also like that thing you can get. What's it called? What's that thing called?
Kindle.
Huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, that.
That.
Where you could on the screen.
Yep.
Because you can put that in your pocket when you're travelling. And you can have 1,000 books in your pocket.
I do exactly that. I've got a Kindle, and I don't know how many, but it's up around 1,000, and they're all in this, just this thing. All I need to do is recharge the battery, and I can disappear into the Kindle.
Aren't they a great thing?
They are.
They're a great thing, the Kindle. But I'll read from the Kindle, but I'll buy the book still, because
absolutely.
I think that's only fair, and I like libraries apart from that.
Yes.
Well, it's been an absolute delight to talk to you, Sir Peter, and Lady Cosgrove. I'm delighted that you came in. It's probably a nuisance to have to come staggering in here and sit down and talk to some bloke you really don't know all that well.
No, I love radio as a medium, John, and I've been on with you before, and we always have a wonderful chat. I love the radio.
Yeah, well, I do too, and I love talking to people like you, and I'm very proud that I've been able to talk to you at this level. It's been great.
Thank you, John.
Thank you very much
indeed, John.
That's a pleasure, Lady Cosgrove. And thank you again very much for coming in. And Sir Peter, thank you.